One of the biggest productivity hurdles is losing your data. Your computer crashes, you haven't backed stuff up, you've been meaning to, but you just never got around to it. That's where CrashPlan comes in. CrashPlan has been around since 2001, and they're a pioneer provider of cloud-based data protection and recovery services, both to individuals and businesses. And I guess ultimately, you've got to ask yourself, how much are your ideas worth, especially when you lose them? Whether it's a business plan, your images, your spreadsheets, your audio files, any of the files you use to work or manage your home. They've got options for everyone from solo creators to growing businesses. CrashPlan works efficiently in the background while you work, encrypting and sending all your new or changed files to their secure cloud every 15 minutes. And then if something happens to your files, your hard drive crashes, your cat knocks over a cup of coffee onto your laptop, or you just accidentally delete a file, your files are just a click away. CrashPlan makes it simple to restore some or all of your data with unlimited version retention. CrashPlan is your ultimate rewind button. Don't let data disasters slow you down. CrashPlan has your back and keeps you moving. Go to crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Bruce Tulgan. He's got a great new book out called The Art of Being Indispensable at Work. Win influence, beat overcommitment, and get the right things done. And that's exactly what we talk about in this conversation. We start off with talking about what does being indispensable at work actually mean? How to not overcommit yourself as you are still doing things for others and for yourself in your workplace, knowing when to say no or not yet, but also how to say yes. And overall, just getting better at working together with your team, with your peers, and becoming, again, indispensable in your position or role in your workplace. There's some real key stuff here in this conversation with Bruce Tulgan. Well, this week it is my privilege to welcome to the show Bruce Tulgan. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you so much for including me.
You've got a brand new book out called The Art of Being Indispensable at Work. This concept of being indispensable, it's not necessarily new, but I think you're coming at it from a new perspective. You've written many books. What does being indispensable at work mean? And what led you to this from your experience with everything you've written so far?
Well, I think right now, especially, so many people are wondering if they are dispensable after all. And I think in this environment where it feels like there's no job security, people want to be indispensable. Everyone wants to be that indispensable go-to person. And one of the things I've done for the last 27 years in our research is I ask people everywhere I go, hey, who are your go-to people? You know, and I look for who are the go-to people who stand the test of time. So, you know, indispensable is sort of in the eye of the beholder, yeah. Right? So indispensable to whom? I find that, you know, when lots of people in the workplace depend on you, rely on you, want to go to you. When lots of people in the workplace, you know, they want to work with you. They know that if you say you're going to deliver, you're going to deliver. They know that if you say, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this, then maybe we shouldn't do this. That's what I'm trying to help people figure out in the book is, you know, what is it those people have in common? Now, what led me to it is a much longer story. But what's really in the book is, you know, everyone's wondering, well, what does it mean to be indispensable? Does that mean like you're the technical expert? Does it mean that you're the one who works the longest and the hardest? Does it mean that you're the one with the best attitude? You know, and what I found in our research is yes to all three of those questions. But that's just table stakes. That's just the beginning of what makes somebody indispensable.
I am a little bit curious, though, like what were some of the key indicators that kind of in your other past work and the different things that you've written that kind of cued you in on this being a key piece, especially now in the workplace?
Well, what really led to it is that everywhere I went, people were saying to me, gosh, I have to deal with more and more people. Everybody at work now is my customer. And I have to rely on all of these people. Also, I'm their customer. So I'm getting requests. I'm inundated by requests, not just from my boss and from my own team, but sometimes from people all over the organization, sometimes people I don't even know, and they're relying on me. And sometimes they're things that are right in my wheelhouse. Sometimes they're not. And meanwhile, I find myself having to get what I need from people all over the organization, sometimes people who don't know me, and often people I can't hold accountable. So what I found was that navigating this increasingly demanding workplace where you have to deal with more and more people, where everybody's relying on each other, everybody is each other's customer, and with so many factors outside your control, of course, collaboration is great. Working with people across departments and functions is great. There are huge business advantages to that. But what I found was it's also driving everybody crazy. And so that was what I first set out to investigate. And, you know, I would say to people, well, what do you do with it? Oh, well, if you don't have authority, then you have to use influence. But then when I would test that out on people, they'd say, yeah, what the heck does that even mean? So it was trying to untangle this puzzle of collaboration. And, you know, what I found was people want to be indispensable. And as a result of that, they think, well, then I've just got to work harder than anyone else. I've got to say yes to everyone and everything. And by trying to be indispensable, they found themselves terribly overcommitted. And if you're terribly overcommitted, of course, you can't even be reliable. So this was the puzzle I was trying to solve when I set out to consider writing a book.
By the way, I forgot to mention the subtitle of the book is Win Influence, Beat Overcommitment, and Get the Right Things Done. And I think part of what you've just been talking about is that overcommitment and that getting the right things done in terms of people feeling like, well, to be indispensable or to kind of to secure my position, whatever position that is kind of the way people would think about that. I've got to make sure that anything anybody ever asks me to do, and then some, like I've got to go looking for extra things to do just to make sure that everybody not only knows I do good work, but sees me doing it so that I'm indispensable. But what you're saying is actually that is the wrong way to go about it, is to be a master, you know, attempting to be a master at all those different things means you're mastering none of them, or maybe just a couple of them, but instead pare back and be truly effective and truly masterful at the few things, and being that go-to person like you were referring to.
Yeah. I mean, basically you got to play the longer game. You know, if you play the short game of making somebody happy by saying yes, you too often find yourself overpromising, promising things you can't deliver, or maybe promising things you shouldn't deliver, you know? And, so by trying to be everything to everyone, you end up being, never anybody's go-to person, or at least not for very long. You have to play the long game of reputation. You have to play the long game of being reliable, of say what you mean what you say. If you make promises, people can take them to the bank. And if you say no or not yet, people trust that because they know you have a track record of being aligned with the leadership and the mission and the priorities and the marching orders. And you have a track record of making good decisions, and you have a track record of delivering, and you have a track record of being great to work with. So, you know, you got to play the long game.
Sounds like this is a matter then of knowing when to say no and when to say yes. What's the secret to that?
Yeah, you got to know when to say no and how to say yes. Sometimes people say, well, you have to learn how to say no and when to say yes. And I think that's backwards, you know, because how to say no, the idea is like, well, maybe if you could sugarcoat it, people will like it, you know, and nobody wants to hear no. You could sugarcoat it all you want. Of course, you should be polite, but sugarcoating no, it's still no. What I've learned in our research is that yes is where all the action is. Yes is your chance to add value. Yes is your chance to collaborate. Yes is your chance to deliver tangible results. So yes is where all the action is. What that means is you better not waste your yeses. Your yeses are golden. Every good no makes room for a better yes. So the trick is having people trust your no's and your not yet's. And again, that's a little bit of a longer game because in retrospect, if you have a reputation for delivering, if you have a reputation for making good decisions, if you have a reputation for doing good work, being good to work with, then people are much more likely to respect your no or not yet. If you say no or not yet, they might stop and think, gee, maybe we shouldn't do this or you know, because you've got that reputation. So that's the longer game part of it. But in terms of a day-to-day practice, what we've learned is the key is tuning into the ask, tuning into the request. When somebody makes an ask of you, tune in, ask the ask questions, fine-tune the ask. So often asks are sloppy. And so when you tune into somebody's request and ask them more questions, help them fine tune their request, really try to understand what they need and where that fits with your ability to deliver and also with your network of other people who might be able to deliver for them. When you do that, you're respecting their need. You're giving them an experience. You're not blowing smoke. You're being authentic. You're trying to understand what they need, and that makes them feel like their need is respected. So then, once you really understand their need, you also have a much better sense. You might find out what sounded like a big ask is really a small ask. You might find out what sounded like a small ask is really a much bigger ask. You might find out, oh, that is something I can do. Or you might find out that, oh, that's really not something anyone should do. So tune into the ask. Spend more time on the ask. I always tell people, learn to take an intake memo. When somebody, even if somebody stops you in the hallway, stop and take notes. Show them you're respecting their needs. And then, so when do you say no? If you can't do it, because if you say yes, then you'll be overpromising and you won't deliver. If you're not allowed to do it, you better say no. If you think on balance you shouldn't do it or you shouldn't do it yet, then you have a conversation about that. Then saying no, you will turn out to have been correct. And that's going to help you build your reputation. And all you're doing when you say no is making room for a better yes, because yes is where all the action is.
This also feels like it goes hand in hand with what you say about indispensable people are people that finish what they start. And by identifying when to say no or how to say yes, that they're much more likely to be able to finish what they start because, one, they're not overcommitted. Or two, they're working in their wheelhouse because they've done the ask correctly. They've figured out that request. They've gone through that process you just laid out for us.
That's absolutely right, because so often people take on so much. And in taking on so much, they render themselves overcommitted. They find themselves juggling. If you're always juggling, what happens? Right? You're going to drop the ball. And if you're juggling and you drop a ball, it's not like you decide which ball to drop. You drop a ball you didn't intend to drop. Sometimes you try to catch it and then all the balls get dropped. So even, no matter how much you have on your to-do list, you have to execute one thing at a time. And that's why I say my beyond the to-do list thing is don't just have a to-do list, also have a do list. This is what I'm going to do today.
What do you say is the difference between those two, I guess, those two lists?
Well, the to-do list is your running list. Mm-hmm. The do list is each day, choose some things you are going to do. So everyone has a busy schedule. Everyone has a long to-do list, right? Here's the trick. The magic happens in the gaps in your schedule. Find gaps in your schedule, block those for focused execution time, and then make your do list in those chunks of time. What are you going to do? So how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? In that gap, how many bites of the elephant can you, take a bite, you have to chew it, you have to swallow it, and then take another bite.
I like that. How many bites of the elephant can you fit into that one, that time block, that scheduled focus time block?
Exactly.
According to the CDC, 74% of the U.S. is overweight. That is a staggering number, and it means that the majority of adults, like myself, need to lose weight to improve our metabolic health. The good news is Prolon can help. Prolon is fasting with food. That's right. It's fasting, but it's with food. And it all starts with Prolon's 5-day program. Snacks, soups, and beverages are all designed to activate your body's fasting state. And it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. With Prolon, you get everything you need, prepackaged, ready to go. Every order of Prolon's 5-day program comes with 5 boxes labeled by day, so you know what to eat each day. Prolon is science-backed nutrition that helps support blood sugar levels and cardiovascular health. And change your relationship with food in just 5 days. I've had experience with fasting myself, both intermittent and otherwise, and Prolon makes it so much easier. It's not a diet, it's science. Science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. Right now, Prolon is offering Beyond the To-Do List listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/beyond. That's prolonlife.com/beyond for this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/beyond.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. With Indeed, you can ditch that busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, making their matching engine your go-to because it's constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. I used to be involved giving my input into the hiring process for a few key roles that were connected to mine. And man, do I wish we had Indeed back then, because we could have gotten much higher quality hires using Indeed. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your job more visibility on Indeed.com at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beyond.
Another aspect that I think probably plays hand in hand with the no's and the yeses and the finishing what you start is the ability to Work smart. I'm all about that. That's, you know, I'm all about when I discovered or was taught in, you know, elementary school at some point, the whole idea behind the fulcrum and the lever, you know, where you move the lever and you push less but get more output. I was like, well, that's the way to go. Duh. And so
wonderful metaphor too.
So I wonder how do these go-to people identify, you know, their strengths, their what they do best, in other words, so that they can work smarter and be known for specific things.
Yeah, I mean, because you want to know, you have to know what you want to be known for. But I'll tell you where I sort of differ from some of the conventional wisdom about this, that what some people will tell you, well, you have to work in your area of passion and strength. And I often say, well, gosh, who's going to do all the work? So, of course, it's best if you can work in your area of passion and strength. But what I always tell people is often you're going to have lots of aspects of your job that you have to do over and over and over again that might not be areas of your natural strength, your natural ability, and they may not be things about which you're passionate. It's okay. What that means is if you have to do it a lot, you better get really good at it. So don't figure it out on your own. Study proven best practices. Find repeatable solutions. Use job aids. So whatever you have to do over and over again, professionalize. Make it one of your specialties. And then once you're good at it, then you'll be able to do it much better, much faster, with a better attitude. You'll feel better about it. You'll enjoy it more. And anytime you have to add a specialty to your repertoire, learn in plain sight, identify proven best practices, identify repeatable solutions that have already been developed, find job aids. If there are no job aids, build job aids for yourself. Professionalize everything you do. Make it one of your specialties. That's the key to working smart.
One of the other aspects I think that we've touched on slightly when it comes to when people come to you, and lots of people and more people are coming to us with these requests, not to mention looking out ahead to see what other people may need. And I don't want to disqualify that part. In fact, I think that's still something very key. I'm curious what your thoughts are. Looking for opportunities when it comes to what other people are involved with that fit with what you want to be known for and are in your wheelhouse, that are in your skill set, that are part of what you do best. I mean, I know that that can be a slippery slope of, well, I'm always looking out for what other people are doing, but I think that's also, it's almost like proactively seeking out the requests ahead of when they get brought to you. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a super smart strategy. And I love that. And I guess in my book, I call that not just being a go-to person, but finding go-to people wherever you need them and building up new go-to people. But I think what you're saying is, you're trying to look for great customers in advance, right?
Yes.
Cultivate great customers in advance. And in a way, you're trying to fill up your dance card with the stuff that you're good at. You're looking for great customers in your areas of specialty. I think that's a brilliant strategy.
What about, again, that kind of walks us closer to, it's not all about just being you and you being indispensable. And in fact, you even kind of said it with finding other go-to people. Let's talk a little bit about the relationships that an indispensable person has in their workplace.
Yeah. So people, anyone will tell you, relationships are where it's at. People are your most valuable asset, right? All that stuff. But then what do they mean by that? Some people mean making best friends at work. Our data is very mixed on the value of best friends at work, but that's a complex story to tell. Some people mean politics, you know, making alliances with big shots or proving yourself to some of the big shots, maybe even undermining some of your rivals. Some people, what they mean is just building personal rapport with people. So maybe not making best friends, but having lots of personal rapport building interactions. What our research shows is the key to relationships at work is the work. When the work goes wrong, the relationships get damaged. And when the work gets better and better, the relationships get better and better. What you have in common at work is the work. And so our advice is build relationships first and foremost by adding value. Don't focus on what you need from other people. Focus on what they need from you. And that lines right up with your, you know, looking proactively for good customers in your area of specialty. But think about what you bring to the table. What can you do in any interaction? How can you add value? What do you need to learn so you can add value? What do you need to share so you can add value? Add value. That should be your focus in relationship building. And then whenever you do work with somebody, if you're going to plan, right? Remember, yes is where all the action is. You got to set up every yes for success. And that means every yes deserves a plan and focused execution. And then the third piece is what happens on the other side of any work that you do together, task, responsibility, or project that you do with anyone else at work. You have to have an after action process. In the military, they call it an after action review. Our after action process that we recommend is three parts. Number one, make a spectacular over the top thank you, one of your signatures. Be grateful and show gratitude when people help you succeed and when you're able to help them succeed. Be grateful and show gratitude. So don't just send a thank you note, but CC that person's boss and that person's boss's boss. And then all of a sudden your thank you note turns into a written commendation. Number two, look at what went right, but also what went wrong. And don't blame, don't finger point, don't undermine. Rather say, hey, these are opportunities for us to work better together next time. And number three, look around the corner to the next chance to collaborate with that person and try to plan based on what you've learned. Try to plan the next collaboration so it goes better.
I love this. I think then the next step is that promoting this indispensableness or go-to-ism, which almost to some people would seem antithetical. It's like, no, why would I want to point out that other people are the go-to person for things when that makes thinking that that makes them more dispensable? But in fact, sometimes and or often having that referral. Let's say referralness. I don't know if that's really a word or not, but being that referral guy, in other words, me being connected makes me indispensable when I always know who that, if I'm not the guy, I know who the guy is.
Yeah, exactly. In the book, I borrow a phrase from a longtime friend and client, know who's who in the zoo. You got to know who's who in the zoo. Know where the snakes live, know where the teddy bears live. Know where you got to know where all the different characters are and what they do. And also not just knowing who's who, but having relationships with them where you've made yourself valuable to them. And one of the great things about real influence and my influence lives in your brain and your heart, right? Your influence lives in my brain and my heart. That's what's weird about real influence. Right? Real influence is what other people think of you. So giving other people an opportunity to be valuable That's something you can, if you give me a chance to be valuable, you've made yourself valuable to me, and it's an upward spiral. You've made yourself valuable to me by giving me a chance to add value for someone else. And that's how you keep building your influence. One of the great things about real influence is you can lend it, you can give it away. And the more you lend your influence and give your influence away, the more influence you have.
I was going to say, this is really a practical working out of what you were just referring to, which is, well, with literally the referrals of, say, somebody comes to me and I'm not the guy, but I know who the person is. Well, that person is going to potentially say, oh, well, who sent you? And they'll tell them that you were the one who sent them. And then they'll keep you in mind for that for next time. And they'll remember, in other words, you're laying all these different favors in a sense, you know?
Well, I'll tell you something. I think that's exactly right. We are like minds.
So I'm really curious. Is there any, like, what would be maybe a starting point here? I mean, we've talked about a lot of different pieces here to this. What's, you know, if somebody's just getting started, they say, you know what, this is something that I've kind of neglected to do in my workplace or in my career. What are some first steps that you would say need to be the first steps if somebody's getting started towards being indispensable?
Well, the first thing you've got to do is figure out exactly what is your role, exactly what are the tasks, responsibilities, and projects that are in your expectations. So you've got to align with your boss. The first person you have to manage every day is yourself. The second person you have to manage every day is your boss. And the third person you have to manage every day is anyone else you have to deal with, up, down, sideways, or diagonal. But you got to manage yourself, of course. So self-mastery is critical. Take good care of yourself. Get up early. Get enough rest. Show up with, no matter how you're feeling on the inside, show up with a great attitude on the outside, and then align. Make sure you know exactly what your boss's priorities are, what your boss's ground rules are, what your boss's marching orders are. Not just for this month, not just for this week, but for today. Once you have total clarity about that, then start looking sideways for who you're going to start building networks of. And I love your point of go find customers for the things that you are already good at, or for the things you think you can add value. If you're proactive about finding customers, you know what you're really doing is filling up your dance card, doing the stuff that you're already good at doing. And then figure out who are going to be your go-to people upon whom you can rely. And by the way, the best place to start for your own go-to people is who are your best customers.
I love it. There's so much more that we could jump into and go all over the place with, but what's in the book is amazing, and it's a timely book, especially now. And so it came out today, if I'm not mistaken. It's at the time of this recording, it is out as of now. I would love to direct people to where maybe they can get more information on it. That's not just like, you know, Amazon or other, you know, booksellers, but anywhere on your site specifically where people can find out more.
As you say, it's unusually timely because people are feeling like there's a lot of uncertainty. So this is a way to gain some control. And yes, wherever books are sold, but also rainmakerthinking.com is our website. That's probably the best place to go. You can sign up for our news feed. It's totally free, completely free. You can't pay for it. It's completely free. And, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter at Bruce Tulgan. And then Harvard Business Review Press, my publisher, would say wherever books are sold.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'll link up to all of that in the show notes. And Bruce, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for what a privilege to be on your podcast.
Well, that's another podcast episode crossed off your podcast listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Bruce Tulgan and got some tips on how to become more indispensable at work. If you found this episode enjoyable and know somebody else who needs to hear it, would you do me the favor of sharing this episode with them? You can do that by going to the show notes over at beyondthetodolist.com and sharing it there, or hitting the share button in your podcast player app of choice where you're listening to this right now. Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks again for listening. And I'll see you next episode.